Hey everyone, welcome back to the Society Says podcast. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different than what you typically find here on this podcast. I have a guest here with me today who is here to share his life story. I'm very thankful to have him here today because he has gone through many hardships, many trials in his life, but his mentality is amazing to me, and I think it's going to be a good story for some of you guys to hear. Having said that, I do want to put a warning out there that we are going to be heavily talking about abuse today, and if some of the details might get a little bit graphic, and if that's going to be a trigger for you, if you're sensitive to this topic, then this is your time to exit out of this episode, and you can maybe listen to it, you know, down the road. But I would acknowledge that and exit out if this isn't something that you can listen to right now. But having said that, we're going to go ahead and move forward. Nathan, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, and then you can go ahead and start telling your story.
My name is Nathan McWilliams. I was born September 23rd, 1995. And the reason I say that specifically is because I want you guys to know something that most people really don't deal with in their life. But I have the worst terminal illness on the planet. There's roughly 270 people in the entire world. The big scientific technical name is HIES, which stands for hyperimmunoglobulin IgE syndrome. Basically, what it does is I produce an antibody called IgE, the white blood cell antibody, in excess. So I have been allergic to pretty much everything since I was born. It's a genetic mutation. It's a STAT3 mutation. You can look up the former name from it because it's easier and I'm sure more people can look to it, but it's called Job's syndrome. Like Job from the Bible. And the reason that they call it that is because one of the symptoms of my disease is boils. For the moment I was a little kid, anytime I got a small cut, I got a boil. Didn't matter how small of a cut it was, I'd get boils. The boils start in your muscle and grow outward. And then they fill up with blood, and then pus. And you get so many of them after a certain point that it infects your blood, which the blood infections usually damage the tissue of your organs. And that's something I've been dealing with for roughly 14 years. I've had a blood infection every year since I was 11 years old. That's really only the beginning, though, because added with having the worst terminal illness on the planet, which not only causes the boils, it causes muscle, bone, and nerve deterioration. I've had 11 eye surgeries. My left eye is completely blind. I can't see out of it at all. All I see is black. My skin is ripped off more times than I can count. Fun fact about the disease is you start with eczema as a child and the eczema thickens, and as you eat food, you have allergic reactions, and eventually you have so many allergic reactions that hives cover your entire body and scab over. And that continues till either A, the infections get so bad that you die, or B, you adjust to it. The life expectancy of people with my disease is 27. That's why I told you guys my birthday. I have approximately 2 years left to live, if I'm lucky. I've had 11 hospitalizations this year alone, and I was facing organ failure a month ago and was about to be put on hospital. Because the great thing about this disease is that I produce an allergic reaction to everything. I'm allergic to the sun. I was allergic to food so intensively as a child that I couldn't eat anything without getting vicious hives. Added with that, the vicious hives, the bone degeneration, the nerve deterioration. I was bullied viciously by all of my peers. I didn't have a friend until I was 12 years old. People bullied me, girls, boys, everyone. Because it's fun to pick on a kid that has a deformity. My face was so scarred from the hives that no one wanted to talk to me. No matter how nice I was, no one wanted to be around me. No one wanted to associate with me. They played a game where touching my chair would give them a virus and everybody would just run away from me. Sounds pretty messed up, but it's only part of it. Started being tortured by my family when I was 4 years old. My older cousin beat me. He's 15 years older than me. He used to pick me up, slam me into the wall, punch me until I couldn't move, scream in my face, hit me with cable wires. Remember one particular day, probably was like 6 years old, picked me up, threw me into the carport at where my aunt was living, and we were living at the time. I hit my head on the ceiling and fell to the ground. I was bleeding, and because of how much I've been abused by him, it's a common thing. So I just got up and just, I cried a lot, but no one really cares. Added with my aunt and him, I didn't have a childhood. I lost my innocence at an early age. My aunt, she likes to psychologically torture people, specifically just me, because I don't bow down to anyone, and I haven't since I was a child. I was raised by psychopaths. My mother's a psychopath. My cousin's a psychopath. My father's a psychopath. Pretty much a large majority of the family that I was raised with have some sort of personality disorder that makes torturing a child fun to them. So my aunt used to lock me outside in Arizona heat when I was 6 years old. She used to come at me with knives. And I used to run and hide at our neighbor's house, who happened a couple months ago, asked me, do you remember when you used to hide as a child from your aunt? Something that I try to, not necessarily I block it out, I just don't think about it. So my torture never stopped. The abuse of my aunt and my cousin lasted until I was around 9, and they couldn't deal with me anymore. They gave me to my biological mother, who couldn't raise me from infancy to 9 years old because she's a drug addict and she's schizophrenic and she's also a psychopath. So when I went with my mom, she started viciously torturing me. And I thought what I went through with my aunt and cousin was bad until I started staying with my mom. Started with psychological abuse. Alienated me from all of my family, cut off contact. She used to threaten to kill me and lock me in a room and scream at me for hours and hours a day, repeatedly. This was the first week of me being with her. Every single day, screaming at me, threatening to kill me, over and over and over again. Calling me a demon, calling me a bad child. Then we moved with her boyfriend at the time, and it continued. My older sister participated in the psychological torture. That continued until I was roughly 11, where she married my stepdad, his name is LC, and that's when the physical abuse started. I remember she got drunk. One of their favorite hobbies is getting drunk. My mother's other favorite hobby is chasing me down and torturing me when she's drunk. So he chased me outside, tackled me to the ground, slammed my face into concrete, scratched me across my face. I had the scratches on my face when I went to school. And as I mentioned earlier, my peers loved teasing me. So they made jokes about me getting into a fight. And I never said anything. My mom slammed my face into concrete. What can I say?
Well, I was going to ask just really quick. I know that a lot of times people don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And you mentioned earlier about going to hiding at your neighbor's house. Did your neighbors know at all, like, what was going on?
Yeah.
Okay. That's unfortunate. I'm sorry. All right, you can keep going whenever you're ready.
All right. So, as the first instance of abuse happened, continued to get worse, progressively worse. He used to punch me in the face with rings on, slam my face into the floor repeatedly. He used to put her elbow in my throat and choke me until I couldn't breathe. She would pin me to the ground and sock me in the face repeatedly. Every time she got drunk and my stepdad got into an argument, she'd take her frustrations out on me. Or even if they were having a good time, she'd still chase me down and torture me. It was fun. Actually, I do remember the first instance before the physical abuse. I was around 10 when I was diagnosed with Job's disease. I had cuts all over my body because with eczema, you get itchy scratch a lot. She poured alcohol into all of my wounds. I remember there were times to prevent me from scratching, she would tie my hands behind my back and leave me in a room for hours at a time, and then hit me when I got out of the restraints. I never said anything because my cousin's abuse stripped me of my innocence. It stripped me of a lot. It took away a certain part of me that children are supposed to have. And so for me, being used to being abused, it's not like I necessarily knew. I knew that I didn't deserve it, but I also knew there was nothing I could do. My mother was stronger than me. She's very clever. My name is spelled N-A-T-H-E-N, and she did that on purpose. Because if you Google me, my name doesn't come up. It's easier to hide me, which is what she wanted. Because as a psychopath, people see the movies and think psychopaths just go out and kill people. It's not what psychopaths do. Psychopaths like playing with their victims, torturing them and torturing. Them, you don't get to torture them and elicit fear. My mother loved torturing me so much, she would never actually want to actually kill me. She wanted to make me think because that sort of submissive state grants the target sort of hear that at any moment their life could be taken away, so they're usually less likely to report anything. The thing that my mother didn't understand is that I became a psychopath at 4. I was born empathic, so I've always felt my emotions more deeply. Because of my cousin, the brutality with beating turned me psychopathic, and because I'm empathic, I was able to fight a large majority of it, but it still stripped me of that part of my humanity. I lost touch with my emotions a long time ago and lost the ability to feel anything, which to an empath, it's like death, because empaths love everybody and not being able to feel anything, it's awful. I have friends and I love them, but I can't feel it. I can't feel anything. And my mother simply enhanced that. around 12 is when I started getting hospitalized more frequently with Wilkes disease. I had 2 eye surgeries because I developed cataracts, and one of the medications that the hospital prescribed for me blinded me when I went out in the sunlight. So I lost my vision at roughly 10 years old. And it continued, and I declined more and more with my disease, and my mother's torture began to get more severe. The worst instance, I'd say, with my mother was she got drunk and saw me and chased after me, caught me, and she had rings on, and she just punched me in the face a couple of times, and I thought it was over, because at that point, I know her patterns of abuse. I know how much she's going to hit me. I know when she's going to hit me. She slammed my face into the floor, and I thought, well, she's done now, but she didn't stop. She kept slamming my face into the floor, kept slamming it over and over and over again. And when I cried and begged for my stepdad, he said he wasn't going to do anything. So she kept slamming my face into the floor. She dragged me down the hallway, threw me into the shower, poured a couple Jack Daniels all over me, turned the shower on, and left. I cried for like 5 minutes and got up and went to go take a bath and found that there was blood all over my head. My head had swelled so much, and there was dried blood everywhere. And I cried. And I told my older brother, her eldest son, and he did nothing. And at that moment, I realized that the world doesn't care about what happens to me. So if I didn't figure out a way to survive my mother, she was going to kill me. My childhood was horrific. My mother made sure to sadistically torture me in every way possible. Anything I liked, she took it away from me. My best friend, the only friend that I had, was scared because he was the first person I told everything that happened. And my mom is so manipulative that she went to my school when I actually did call CPS when I was 13. And talked to every single one of my teachers, and they told me that I wasn't allowed to leave class at all, even go to the bathroom, because my mother was being investigated by CPS. She didn't tell them that. She just, for my safety, didn't want me out of class. So I had to sit in class with my best friend, not being able to leave at all, and figure out how to escape a psychopath, because CPS was called 4 different occasions and nothing was done because I didn't have marks. When I did have marks, I lied because I was scared of crying. And so in their mind, I wasn't being abused. When I did actually have proof and CPS did get involved, I ran away for a week. Went to my best friend's house, CPS came and got me. CPS came and met with me and my mother. As soon as CPS left, she punched in my face and put me in a car with my stepdad, and we drove to Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, I was 14 and I figured, hey, it's only 2 more years before I turn 16 and I can emancipate myself. The other option, like I said, this is graphic, but I am a psychopath, was to kill her and my stepdad. And because of how my mother operates, she left no trail of where she was. And she makes money under the table because she braids hair. And at that point, she had tortured me so much that I really did care about killing her and my stepdad. Those are the facts. I would have killed her, and I would have cut up her body and my stepdad's, and buried them somewhere, and waited a few weeks, probably a couple months, because that was a stipulation for me going into foster care, is I had to be homeless for 2 months. And would have waited, then went into foster care. And my mother, like I said, doesn't leave a trail. No one would have ever known. I told the girl that I liked at school that I planned to kill my mother. She told me not to. She was being abused. She said that as bad as it is, that we both can make it out of it. And so I did something that I never did before. I told a teacher, because I have no faith in authority. I mean, I was being tortured for 13 years and no one did shit. So I told my teacher and she told the counselors and they said, like I said, I have to be homeless for 2 months or have proof of being abused. I know my mother very well, better than anyone. So I knew a way to get her to punch me in the face and leave marks. And so I baited her into an argument one Saturday. She punched me in the face 10 times, busted my lip, blackened my eye. And I got up and was about to get dressed and leave. I had the abuse, had the markings that I needed to go into foster care. I'd been growing my hair for 14 years, which was the only thing that made me happy. My hair was very long. My mother knew that was the only thing that made me happy. In all of her torture, she could never break me. The one thing she knew would break me is if she cut off all my hair. So before I left, she grabbed me by my hair, slammed me to the bed, pulled me off of the bed by my hair, pushed my head into the floor, cut off all my hair. Then I left and went into foster care. But at that moment, I really just wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to be alive. I've been trying to kill myself since I was 9 years old. But because I have this really fucked disease, it breaks down everything so rapidly. So it's really hard for me to die. And foster care sucks. My foster parent was a former NFL player. Him and his wife exploited me and my foster brothers to make millions off of us. So I didn't get a loving home. For 4 years, I sat in foster care because, again, my mom likes to torture me. So she made sure that I sat in foster care for 4 years. Because how it works is that if she shows effort, she gets to keep her rights. They're about to terminate her rights. They terminated her rights. I could do whatever I wanted. I could have gotten adopted by the family that I met in high school, my LDS family that really loved and cared about me. But unfortunately, I had to sit in foster care for 4 years with a shitty foster parent that exploited all of us and drugged children in order to make money off of them. All of this is legal.
Oh my gosh. So how long were you in foster care again?
4 years.
4 years. And did your mom have plans to get you back or no? So what happened after foster care?
After foster care, I turned 18 and moved to Arizona again to be with my aunt. I had a lot of money, so I was like, oh, we'll be with them, because when you're in foster care, they just kick you out. And Vegas is a pretty dangerous city. When I was in high school, I went to a racist high school, I got called a nigger every single day of high school. Racist gangs would come and jump black people every single day. It would never be a fair fight. Three of my friends saw three of the racist gang members. And instead of fighting us fair, they came back with two truckloads. There were 10 people versus 3 people. So we had to run because we know they were just killed. One of my foster brothers is dead. He was shot 7 times and killed last year. That's why I left Vegas, not a fun city. Especially being black in Vegas, it's really not a good city.
So how did you get out of that situation? So it was just the luck of turning 18 in enough time.
I'm a calculated genius. My IQ is roughly around 180. So I've always planned things out ahead of time. And I was the president of the entire state of Nevada for fall. Got a lot of connections and was able to get a lot of things from foster care that most kids weren't. I used the money, left, and came to Arizona, transferred all my benefits to Arizona, and went and lived with my aunt. And I planned to go on a mission, and then I was in school for a little bit. I wanted to graduate with an associate's, and then when I was 20 years old, I lost both of my eyes. My disease, which I had blocked out the memory of having, restarted itself, and I lost both of my eyes. I was blind for 3 years.
So you mentioned that you did serve an LDS mission, correct?
I lost my eyes.
So you were going to, but you were never able to. Okay. I thought that you had, and so I was wondering how that worked, but I guess you were never able to go. Are you interested in ever trying again?
My terminal illness. I get worse every year. The way that it progresses, I probably won't live another year.
Okay. Well, how far did you get in school? Were you able to get that associate's?
Lost my eyes. I was in college and I completed a year and then I lost my eyes. For 3 years, I laid in a bed not being able to see. Every time I would go get a job, I'd have to have another eye surgery. 8 eye surgery. Around the 7th one, I figured I'd never be able to use my left eye again. So they put a lens in my right eye, which ignited my disease worse than it ever had been. See, the thing about eye surgery is that you need a year to recover, and I never had that. I've had eye surgeries back to back to back. So my disease hit worse than anything. And I was getting Social Security at the time and a foster care check. My aunt lied when I was 19 years old and told officials in healthcare in Arizona that I was schizophrenic. So I was able to get control of my disability in foster care check. The stipulate, because I went to jail because someone hit me when I was in Vegas and like I had flashbacks and PTSD from my mother. So I slammed him into a wall and like destroyed his door and sliding glass. So I went to jail for 6 months. And being enclosed for 5 months, I had PTSD, like hallucinations of abuse and everything. So it was pretty bad. And I got out and I was on edge a lot. Vegas is already a hard city to be in. And I had to fight a lot in jail and it's hard. So my aunt took advantage of it to get both of my checks. And I owe Social Security right now $20,000 because they said I don't have a reason to be on Social Security even though I was blind when they kicked me off of it. And I know I didn't spend the money. And I know who did spend my money. My aunt did. And when I lost my checks, both of them, she kicked me out. So I was homeless for 6 months until my older cousin, the one that abused me, took me in. And he had a drug addict girlfriend who was leaving me with her 5 kids. On top of me being sick, I raised 5 kids by myself from September all the way into March, where they kicked me out because my aunt stole $700 from me, which was my rent money. And I was homeless again for 9 months. So I was running the streets homeless in Arizona summer because, one, in Arizona, if you're not a drug addict, you're not afforded the same housing opportunities. So there was nothing they could do. I've been trying for years. I just got housing after 3 years.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea that that was a rule here.
Yep. don't do any drugs. I smoke weed and drink alcohol occasionally, but like, I have the worst illness on the planet, so sue me.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
The other thing is that pain medicine doesn't work on me. Funny thing about having too many antibodies, they destroy everything. So I can't really get drunk. Pain medicine doesn't work. So everything that I experience with my physical body, I have to deal with complete sobriety. When my face rotted off twice last year, and so many boils were left in my skin. I had over 200 boils across my entire body. They all left holes. I was laying in a hospital bed for weeks, regrowing my skin, just sobriety.
So how has it been? Because I know that you have a job currently, and you've had jobs in the past. So how has that been since you do have times where you're hospitalized for a very long period of time?
I get fired.
So you just get a job and then you get fired for being hospitalized just over and over.
Yep. That's why you never have any income. You never have a stable place to live because I have the worst disease on the planet and they don't know what to do at all.
So
I went to... Oh, what were you going to say?
So... When you're interviewing for jobs, do you ever mention your illness, or do you just know it's gonna end, so you just
don't say anything?
Okay, that's probably smart.
They'll fire me immediately. They'll be like, "Oh, you have a terminal illness, you can't work." I tried that with the job I had last year, and they wanted to fire me even though I hadn't missed any work. Mm. So I just keep it quiet now. Even if I turn in documentation and say I was in the hospital, still get fired.
I see. Okay. So, where are we now in the story? Are we up to 2020, or is this...
We're going to backtrack to 2017, where I was 21 and my aunt kicked me out.
Okay.
So, I was running the streets trying to figure out how to live. My best friend in Arizona, his name's Matt. He was the only person that came to visit me. I had 16 hospitalizations when I was 21. He was the only person that came to visit me. My family didn't. I was dying. So one of the things that happens is that my nerves burn me alive from the inside out, and that's how I'll die, because it's essentially like being set on fire from the inside out. And I'll burn and burn until my heart can't take it. And I called all of my family that live here in Arizona and cried on the phone. None of them came to visit. The nurses were crying and asking me, is anyone coming? And I said, no. I was sitting there burning alive for 30 minutes straight. I was about to die. And then something stopped it. Stopped. I don't know why. Or how it, and it kept getting worse. My friend at the time was taking me to the hospital all of the time. I was in school trying to graduate because I needed something. I needed some way to make income where I could work from home, and I couldn't do it. I tried 3 separate times to go to a trade school to graduate because it only took 9 months and my regular degree takes 4 years. Failed every single time because of hospitalizations. And my best friend had to watch me suffer, my skin rip off, all of that. For the past 3 years, eye surgery after eye surgery, he was the only one that was really there. My elders quorum president last year, when I was homeless for 9 months, this is what happened the next year. My aunt knew I was homeless and dying, and because of my eczema, I shed a lot of skin because I regenerate skin fast. She said, I'm going to Vegas for 3 weeks. You're not allowed inside, but you can stay outside. This was Arizona summer. I had already pretty much been dying. She left me outside. She left me a cup of grape juice and said, I love you. You're like my son. Take care. And left. And that broke me inside. I thought my mom was evil. I really did. My aunt is way worse. Never physically abused me, but the thing is that physical abuse is only temporary. Psychological and emotional abuse is far more severe. It does. When she left me outside, my face began to rot, turned yellow, and the elders quorum president, his name is Andrew, he came to see me. I knew I was going to die that day, but because of my condition, I don't present like a normal patient. I don't get fevers. And because of my high pain tolerance, I can have a normal heart rate, even though I'm in excruciating pain. And I didn't know my face was rotting off. He came and saw me, and he was like, you have to go to the hospital. And this is a battle we've been going through for 2 years, knowing that they're not going to admit me, and I knew that. He was like, you have to go right now. And I didn't know why he said that, but I chose to listen to him, and I called the hospital. The EMTs, six of them came up and see me working out outside in July in Arizona heat, stuck outside, unable to move because I was so sick. They were all crying because I didn't know my face was rotting off. And I went to the hospital and saw it, and I cried. My entire face rotted off. I had to regrow all of my skin with sobriety. They released me too early before my face healed, and I went back to my aunt's house, and then I got sicker, and my face rotted off again, and all of my skin rotted off. Again, I had to deal with it with sobriety. Pain medicine doesn't work. Strongest dosage of morphine lasts 20 minutes on me, and they can only give it every 4 hours.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine. I do have a question. You know, obviously you've been through some very unbelievable things that people can't even imagine what it's like to go through. But, you know, there's obviously, there's a light in you. You know, I can see that and I can hear it in your voice. And I'm just wondering, what are, through all the bad, what was something that helped you to keep going?
I've known I was going to die for a long time. The thing about dying is when you're so close to it, nothing can matter anymore. As I was boarded in path, I have a natural connection to the entire planet, but I also understand how evil the world is. So I knew that if I trained hard enough, my mind, body, and spirit, that I could do something that everybody was too scared to. I could go against the most evil people on the planet. You can't. I'm not scared of anything. There's nothing that scares me. And I figure if I take out most of the evil people on the planet, and I die with them dying as well, that the world will be able to be a better place, a gentler place, a kinder place. We won't live in a society that focuses on materialistic values and tearing each other down, and build each other up and love each other. It seems impossible, but the thing is that I've been training for this for 15 years. There's no one stronger than me on this planet. Without a doubt, it's irrefutable. I am psychologically and medically an anomaly. 21 years of torture, and I show no violence at all. None. I've met with a multitude of psychiatrists, They don't know what's wrong with my mind. They simply don't care. It's not that I don't care, but the thing about being a genius is that when you understand that you're smart, you realize is that evil people will try their hardest to try to tear you down, and it's horrific. But I always held the firm belief that if I got stronger than everybody, there would be no one who could beat me. There would be no evil person who could tear me down. And as I approach my 25th birthday, I have been training so long that I'm at the point where now I'm so smart and strong that I say something, people want to be a part of it. And the world is a scary place. Nearly 800,000 people have died this year. And it's horrific. It really is. A lot of agendas are being pushed out. And I see through it all. And even if I'm the only person who would go against evil people, which I intend to be the only person, there's nothing that can be done to me. I'm dying. I don't care. Imprison me. I'm going to die in a year, so it doesn't matter to me. But I will stand up for what's right. I will fight any injustice that I see. There's no one who can out-calculate me. My brain moves faster than most computers. And a secret that I don't tell anybody, but is that I'm only using 50% of my brain power. And I counteracted the worst things that can be done to a person. 50%, that's all I use. 50% is all I've ever needed. I've never needed to use more. Even with my disease, figured out 10 years ago how to counteract muscle deterioration and nerve deterioration. There's a lot of pain that goes with it, and I know I'm the only person that can do it, but I've been doing it for so long that I'm used to it. I burn in the sunlight, but it doesn't stop me from going out into the sun. I refuse to let anything beat me because I know that I'm not living for myself. I live for the world. I live for the good people that are in the world. And I know that one day that I can make enough good people strong enough that we can take back the world from the evil pieces of shit that control it. And like I said, there's no one that can beat me. And I know because it's happened a lot. They try to set me up and get me locked up. But I'm very calculated, very careful about what I say. And I know it'll come to a point where I will die. But I know that I will have made enough impact on the people that are close to me and that do know my story that they'll carry on my one desire, wanting the world to be a better place, be kinder, be gentler, not just for me, but for every little kid that's in foster care, for every woman that's been abused by a man, for every man that has been forcibly torn down by everybody because of their skin color. For every woman that cries out in pain, no one listens. I know that my actions and my strength can be a beacon for people to follow. And that's why I live for you.
Thank you for that. That's amazing.
Pretty much it, though. That's all I had to say.
I love it. I just have one last question. It kind of ties in with that one a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm just curious because, like we said, you know, mental abuse sticks with us for the rest of our life. And, you know, even if it's the smallest amount of mental abuse or if it's something that was so severe, you know, it sticks with us. And I am just curious to know where your mind typically rests. You know, are you more at peace most of the time, or are you angry or frustrated? Just where do you find your mind most of the time?
In order to be completely logical, I have to keep myself between two extremes. agonizing sadness and agonizing pain and extreme pain, as it makes me non-reactive and non-feeling. So I usually bounce between those. If I get too angry, I forcibly torture my own mind with the things that have been done to me to balance me back out so that I don't become violent or anything. I would torture myself before I would hurt another person. I've done it on a multitude of occasions. The sadism that my mother administered and my family administered is not something that can be taken away. But I'll be damned if I become like them. So I torture myself before I hurt another human being.
Well, I'm glad that you are a survivor of abuse that does not carry on to other people. That always makes me happy when I meet people who have gone through abusive things and they refuse to be like that to, you know, people that they know, kids that they might have. So thank you for that. That's really nice to hear. I just want to finish up with asking you if you have any last minute advice for anybody who's listening, anyone who might be currently in an abusive situation or they're still overcoming it. What's your advice?
I mean, for someone with a lot of abuse, something that an abuser will always try to tell you is that you're weak, you're powerless, that no one loves you, and that you deserve this. One thing that you have to keep in mind that I've learned in 21 years of experience, that there's no one more important than yourself. That loving yourself first, realizing that you have a standard of a quality of life that you have for yourself. If a man or woman won't give it to you, give it to yourself. Make yourself your number one. Idolize yourself. Because there's no one you have to be with more than yourself. Relationships are finite. But you, as a person, you'll always be with yourself. You'll always be in your own head. Who else is going to take care of you but yourself? So treat yourself like a king or a queen. And what other people say doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, are they doing anything for you? They affect your life? No, they don't. Simply another person's opinion. Self-esteem comes from within oneself. Make yourself on a pedestal and carry yourself like a celebrity.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast. When Angel reached out to me and told me that you were interested, I was super happy about that. I know that you have gone through so, so much, and I'm just grateful that you're not afraid to share it. So I really feel like there's probably several listeners and now and maybe, you know, in the future that are going to listen to this, and I'm sure it's going to help them if they're in a similar situation. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And anybody who stuck through the end, thank you for listening. I really hope that this was helpful. You know, abuse is a serious thing, and whether it's something very severe and brutal, like the story that was just told, or if it's something more mild, it's abuse, and it's hard to get through, and it's hard to handle the rest of your life. So don't ever feel like you can't cry, or you can't, you're not allowed to feel a certain way, because whatever you're going through, any sort of abuse, it's very difficult. And I think your advice was great. Just love yourself and know that you're strong and you can get through this. So thank you everybody who listened, and make sure to tune in next week for another guest and another episode. And we're going to go ahead and sign out. All right, bye.